not in this commitment document. I can measure what really easily what I say we're doing now as improvements. So around, you know, what did I put in here? The permanency round tables, we have measurements for that. The retraining around the safety model, and we're doing some quality assurance with that. We've already hired the staff, so I guess that's, and we re-ran our workload model to see how process improvements were helping us sort of reduce workload, so it could be reapplied to casework. And we have a whole process we're going through around creating logic models with individual districts related to their data and then measuring the outcome of those logic models. And we're starting the performance-based or outcome-based contracting work with each district. So we're adjusting contracts to be able to measure the outcome of the delivery of specific services to families. So, I mean,
I see, and looking at these, some of these are things that you can measure because they occur over time. For example, if you look at the court one, you know, and then some of them are just whether you're, you know, it would just be a, like a survey kind of thing, you know, with results, you know, like the very first one, our winter shelter care, I encourage you to just the county to find out if everybody was on board. So there's kind of two different kinds of measuring here.
I think what occurs to me is that the metric isn't so much that kind of measurement. This is Lois, I'm sorry, Judge. But it's a lot of these things are things we say we are going to do, and the measurement is the progress towards doing that. So I don't know how you measure practice in accordance with the Oregon State Bar Standards of Representation. How do you measure that?
Right, I was having the same thought process and struggle. The second one is a little easier for us. Work with local courts and juvenile justice stakeholders. We could map out, you know, practice jurisdictions that have worked together to achieve necessary system reform. But that would be a very short-term measure.
Well, that particular bullet in my mind seems more like a court measurement. That if the attorneys are saying work with local courts to create specialized dockets, the courts are going
to
be the ones that have to create the
have
specialized
to drive it.
Docket.
Yeah, right, we have just to. Have to participate
right.
in the conversation.
And maybe part of the problem is who's going to do the measuring and the reporting.
It's funny because I was thinking of the measuring and reporting much more in conjunction with the pilot program if we get that up and running, because then we have a specific county or counties where we're implementing everything that we want to be implementing to improve outcomes, and we can actually measure the results. It's a targeted area. I recognize that it doesn't attach to the first bullet, really. I mean, that's the last bullet.
It makes a lot more sense to me in getting something coherent.
So, this is Megan. So, Nancy, so would you say that the pilot project would incorporate these findings or commitments into the pilot program? So you'd say, like under DHS, where it says clearly state conditions of return, that in the pilot project, you would ensure that those counties are doing that, and you would be able to measure, articulate, like, yes, this is happening.
Right.
So in those pilot counties.
Yeah. So in our current, for example, in our current parent-child representation program, I think much like DHS is doing with their programs, we are measuring the extent to which the lawyers in those jurisdictions are complying with specific provisions of the attorney practice standards, and we're measuring second thing. And we're looking at the the degree to which we're able to help achieve system reform. So yes, both of the things that are mentioned in our process improvement areas would be things that would be measurable in a pilot setting. It's much harder statewide.
This is Valerie. If we're looking at, you know, sort of tracking, are people actually implementing the things they said they would, how are we going to measure what's the effectiveness of those actions, though?
Right.
That's the next step. That's the harder, you know, are we going to look at, are we getting things moving through quicker? Are we having less time in foster care? What are all those points going to be? Because that seems to be the crux of this whole bill.
Right. Our commission has been working so much with performance measures and analyzing what we can do to better measure our performance. And we talk a lot about the difference between inputs and outputs. And the process improvement pieces, those are all inputs. And the outputs we're after are the, you know, reduced time to permanency and, you know, better outcomes for kids. So you're right. I think ultimately what we want to be measuring, we want to be implementing these things, but we want to be measuring how.
What does it mean?
What are the outcomes for kids if we implement these things, or for families? And I should say, generally speaking, I think we might. I was looking this over again this week and thinking that maybe we needed to emphasize in the overview and process portion a little bit more about the importance of making sure that we're not disrupting families unnecessarily. You know, I know that we didn't go all the way to prioritizing return, but there is in the legislation mention of, you know, keeping families united when possible, and I think we need to think about whether philosophically that needs to be a part of the of our document. Just that we talk a lot about, you know, reducing the time to permanency, but we don't talk in here much about trying to maintain families. And I think that probably, I think that's a pretty important aspect that maybe we should highlight at some place.
This is Megan again. So if we were going to put a stated emphasis on, you know, maintaining families or preserving families, could we add a sentence in there, you know, about while upholding the safety of the child or children?
Yep.
In there?
Right, yeah.
Because I think communities, that's where they get nervous. And rightly and should be. So we could. I think that we have opportunity to state that yes, we understand that, and we're looking at that.
Right.
We're considering that. Of course, we are.
So this is Lois. I wouldn't mind putting just in an introductory statement. But the focus of this work group was around kids who are in care. It wasn't around keeping kids out of care.
No, I agree.
So if it's just a little blip at the beginning saying, of course, we all want kids to be safely at home, and that's the preferred plan, but once they enter care, that's what the charge of this work group is.
Right, but I think what I'm getting at isn't necessarily the preventing removal, it's the reunification. So making
that
sure
that is the ultimate permanency plan.
Right.
Okay. So.
That's what I'm trying to get at,
sure.
Is that I feel like it's just a missing piece in the document.
A philosophical statement around
the importance of reunification when possible.
Well, Leola, going back to you, this is Pat again. You've had a lot of experience, I know, and Lois has too, with setting up performance measures. What do you think this document needs to have in it about that?
I personally think that we don't want to use the output measures for the individual tasks, but I think we want to buy into an overarching outcome measures related to length of time to reunification, length of time to guardianship, length of time to adoption. And maybe even a reduction in the number of APLAs.
That's going to happen.
So if we added a section to this about performance measures and stated that,
Yeah, and
that would be a good way to do it in terms of making it clear that that's what we want to measure and that's what we want the performance measures to be, not a survey of how many counties are doing shelter care hearings in the morning versus the afternoon.
Right, and those are measures that we already collect and report data on, so it's not that we need to recreate the wheel.
And you do that by county as yeah. well, right? By
yeah,
jurisdiction.
You can
trust
counties.
Sure. So I think that some of these things that are already implemented in certain jurisdictions and we already have measurements for, it would be, I think, interesting to see once, like, let's say the shelter hearing issue in a county that's not already doing it, we have a measurement,
mm-hmm.
right? And then we ask them to implement it, and then we have another measurement. So that's where we can see where specific recommendations, are they moving the needle? Are they achieving our outcome? Jurisdiction by jurisdiction versus just statewide. If that makes sense.
I think it makes so much sense, but at the same time, I think what is going to be hard about that is that we have to know in each jurisdiction how many of the process improvement pieces have been implemented. Do we not?
And see, to me, I think no. Because I think we just say on a statewide level, these are the goals that we're trying to achieve and the measures that we're trying to achieve. And then we work with our model court teams on those and with the local SCFCR, Safe and Equitable Foster Care Reduction teams on those. And those are measures that people are already tracking at some level and really guide them toward, if you haven't implemented this menu of things, start here. Because these are the things that we think will have the biggest impact.
I think that's true. And I think there's so much going on
right.
that when you start getting down to the micro, you're not going to be able to relate that micro to this outcome.
Yes.
But the overall effort that people are making is going to be what drives the outcome. So I think individually we can take this list of commitments and say, implement these if you're not doing it, or at a minimum, consider implementing it and be able to talk about what you are doing and why you didn't do this. What that will give us is we might be able to see some differences. So let's say you have a place that doesn't do morning shelter care hearings but does afternoon. We could run a survey at some point of the bar in those two counties to see if there's a difference in how they're receiving discovery.
Right. I mean, I would think at some point we would want to know if there was a county that simply wasn't making gains. I would think we'd want to drill down and see how successful we have been at implementing these process improvement pieces.
Yeah, and if there's a county not making gains, at least from my shop, we are drilling down already with them around those. And that's what the logic model work is. So one county's doing really well maybe in preventing entry, but they can't get kids out of care. Another county's not doing very well. Kids are coming in, but they're getting them out really quick. We're trying to get them to focus their efforts on those pieces that they're not performing as well at to try and heighten the performance.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. But I don't know that I will ever be able to say, and because these attorneys really spent more time with their clients, that's why those kids got out of care. I don't know how you measure that.
Well, this is Valerie, but I think in a perfect world, and you know, part of this is trying to figure out how do you actually implement whatever we come up with. In a perfect world, we'd look at some of the statistics that we have now. You know, how long is it taking to get to permanency, jurisdictional hearings, some of the things that are already, I think, the reports that we get from Leola. You can look at it countywide. Then you can see who's doing, I mean, I would want to know who's doing what, who's added what, and in a year, see, has it changed? Or are we still the same? You know, are we still taking this much time to get to jurisdiction? Has there been any meaningful change in any direction? I don't know that you can correlate it all, but it would certainly be interesting because we're saying, here are all these recommendations, here's the commitments that all of the stakeholders can make, with the idea that these should make a difference in all of the impediments and things that are identified as part of this piece of legislation. And so I don't know how you avoid figuring out and asking each county what have they been able to do with respect to the recommendations if you're going to measure.
Discipline A. Would we just be looking at measuring pilot counties, or would we be comparing across the board as far as implementation of what our recommendations? So that's kind of a question I guess I'm posing. But the other piece is there's maybe an opportunity to do a comparative analysis of counties that have implemented the pilot and look at their data that's already being tracked by Department of Justice, right? And see, has there been changes? And where? So do pilot counties look like they're affecting greater change in the areas that we had hoped for? And if that same change isn't happening in counties where there isn't a pilot, that does indicate that the recommendations have been good. But there's so much data already being tracked by all agencies that I think utilizing that data in a different way may be a good starting point.
So the legislation, of course, provides for an evaluator. Because when we say, we're going to measure this, and are we tracking this, and we're going to compare that, I want to know who we is, and I personally want to know how that gets staffed and supported, because it's not a matter of us coming together as a task force and bringing all our numbers, because that doesn't tell us anything but our numbers. So really, you know, perhaps what we need to put in here is that in order to effectively develop and monitor metrics related to this, there has to be some means of funding it or staffing it or something. Because I'll track my stuff, but I'm not going to be able to track your stuff. And we track things differently. They don't mesh together. So an evaluation of whether or not that was effective could be because the pilots were effective. It also could be because the school system changed something and parents were getting more. I mean, who knows? But we don't have the ability in our separate systems to bring that together. We have to have someone who does that for us. So I just think that by putting individual outcome-based metrics in here, we are committing to a fiscal and time element that currently I don't have because of other things we're tracking and trying to do. Now, we could figure out how to get an evaluation of that, I think, but...
I think it's in the...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that this work group also sunsets. This group ends.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So it's not that we're coming together again in this formal way of sharing data and seeing how we're doing and doing the analysis, but we're all going back to our own entities and using the measures that we already have and taking this menu of things and saying, these are the things that we committed to, and let's see how we can improve our numbers in the areas of reducing the length of time that kids achieve permanency and reducing APLIS.
That's absolutely
right. And we all have our own ways of doing that, and that's totally fine. We this entity that we're in here now ends, and to me, it's just we need some type of commitment for if Lois says to me next year, so how has Judicial been doing with the reducing the length of time? And I can show you, well, yeah, we've updated our measures and we've done, you know, these counties implemented the attorneys at shelter hearing and look how that did with their time to jurisdiction. And so, you know, there will be things I'll be able to talk about because we've gone through this process.
That's a very good point. I think you're absolutely right. So I think we could put in here around the metrics that they want, those things that we are measuring that tell us the story of our work. Like you have how many hearings and how long hearings are taking and that kind of thing. And we have, you know, entries, exits, change in plan, length of stay. We have a lot of things we track to determine how the branches are doing. So we could just say, have a summary statement even saying each entity will use their normal or whatever, you know, the metrics they currently have in place to measure outcomes related to permanency. and hopefully there'll be an evaluator to look at the impact of the pilot counties.
Right. I think the challenge, of course, is for entities like Department of Justice, District Attorneys, PDSC. We don't have metrics around permanency. You know, that's very much a court DHS kind of measure.
But you're representing that if certain things occur, there'll be an improvement in permanency from URL's perspective, attorneys for children and parents and state's attorneys. So if you all, if we come to you in a year and say, how's it going with the work with local courts to create specialized dockets?
Right. But it has to be a collaborative effort because we don't have that data.
Right, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Because there's already some measures that are happening in at DHS that include that.
Right, what I'm saying is I think Lois's suggestion was each entity can just take their existing performance measures as they relate to permanency and use those. And I'm just saying I don't think every entity at the table already has those measures because we don't have that data necessarily. You know, we don't.
Well, the good thing is that there's a new DHS ROM site that is open to the public that has data that you can look at on a statewide level as well as on a county level that looks at these measures, especially related to permanency and exits of kids from foster care. So you would have ready access to, anybody would have ready access to looking at those measures and, you know, you could say, wow, we've implemented these things in these counties. Let me see if it's changed their time, and you could easily go in and find that.
And if you look at the education and training, there, you know, the assumption is that if this happens, it will help attorneys be more competent and prepared in court. Therefore, permanency will occur quicker. So the metric you would have is whether or not these things happened. And then we would be able to say, in these counties, we have all these webinars for those remote counties now for the attorneys there, and wow, they have a reduction in the length of time to permanency, which is our number. So I think that's the metric really you all end up with, is these activities, not the permanency itself.
Get this back to what are we measuring? I mean, I think it is complicated when you're doing it in your own silo as opposed to part of a group effort. And eventually we probably want the group effort.
What does that look like, group effort?
I think some kind of continuation of the conversation around what is each entity doing in each county. You know, we can individually look at whether or not we're accomplishing what's in the process improvement, but unless we have a collaborative dialogue around what's happening in each county as we're looking at permanency outcomes, it's going to be difficult to identify the gaps.
So I think those conversations are happening in individual counties now. And if attorneys, parents and children's attorneys aren't in those conversations, they probably need to figure out how to get in, and we need to make sure they get in.
It's one of our goals, right? It's one of our process improvement goals.
Yeah, I think those conversations are happening as well in the safe and equitable foster care reduction teams at the local level and the model court teams at the local level. We give out, you know, packets of data to counties for those collaborative discussions at the local level. So occasionally bringing it up to this level, I agree with you, is a good idea. And I think we can do that outside of the structure of this work group. We just make a commitment that, you know, once a year we're going to get together and look at the data, and we can do that.
Well, I think we'll be getting together to look at the data based on the current pilot counties. Even if we don't, if this doesn't pass, then we still have those pilot counties moving forward. And I think that's probably going to be the most helpful to us in determining whether or not that effort actually results in a difference in the outcome.
Right, I think the pilot envisioned in this is different. I mean, it's if everyone's fully resourced, what, how much gain can we make? So I think that it is different. I mean, whatever outcomes we see in the pilot counties will be different then.
So I am concerned about the silos, though. I mean, that's part of the reason why, I mean, you know, we're all working really, really hard for these families and for these children with, you know, the best that we got at the table. But I don't think, I think we have to find a way to continue to align our effort. And even when we start talking about just, you know, and I'll use Lane County as an example, you know, there's lots of things, exciting things happening in Lane County, but they're siloed. And not all those groups, whether it's, you know, safe and
equitable,
you know, reduction, or it's, you know, we have a crossover team, you know, the crossover youth team, you know, we have, I mean, I have a list of like 7 different things that are happening in Lane County that I have to send somebody to try and make sure we know what's going on. There is no one, like, entity that's tracking all this stuff and making sure that we're all at the table understanding what the plan is, what we're measuring, where the gaps are. I mean, it's all these individual initiatives and charges that are happening, but they're not happening in alignment. And that's where I think where we stumble over each other, or we have misunderstandings, or there's gaps, because there isn't anything that's aligning all these amazing efforts and then being able to track them. And I'm not saying this work group should be doing that, but I think part of what we've been able to accomplish here is because all of us are sitting here at the table and we know in our own, you know, groups or organizations what's happening. And we're able to come to this table and talk and say that, and then figure out how, you know, well, how does CASA align with, you know, what you're trying to do and what you're trying to do, you know, so that we can work together to make these improvements. And that's the part that I'm most nervous about when we leave, when this is over, is that there is nothing. There is no, and maybe it should be model court, the model court teams, I don't know, but there is nothing that's grabbing all these great initiatives and work and watching them together.
I think that there are different people at the local level who take on kind of that responsibility depending on the county that you're in. I think in some counties it is the SCFCR team, or in some counties it is the model court team or some other group, because when you look around the table, there's usually some one or two or three key people who are sitting at all of these different meetings, and hopefully one of them has taken the responsibility of being the person with the big red crayon that draws and makes the connections.
I don't think that's true. I mean, I don't think that is happening. I know it's not happening in our county. We have a lot of great things that are happening in our county.
So I guess I don't feel I'm in a position to force counties to collaborate in a way that in which they're not. I can take my staff and really have a commitment and ethic to collaboration. And I think we're doing that, but every single county designs differently. The other piece is in the Strengthening, Preserving, Unifying Families statute. It says counties will come together in a collaborative manner and it will be driven by DHS. Mm-hmm. So we've done that in every county, and the tables are different in every single county based on who wants to participate, who has the time, who has all that. But I can't sit here as a part of this task force and make a commitment that every county will put together a master plan that covers all the initiatives that deal with kids and families that are involved in the child welfare system. I mean, we have a plan, but, you know, then there's the county entities and the health and human services in counties, and, I mean, just I don't think it's possible to do that. Nor are they all the same. They're vastly different, every county.
I would say let's encourage every county to identify what that group is and at least try and track the efforts that relate to permanency. And as opposed to all the other things that are happening in our communities, like through our county health department and all that stuff, just as it relates to juvenile court, just as it relates to permanency, like encourage each county or each jurisdiction to identify who that group is, and not just assume that there is some group doing it. Like, encourage each county to say, hey, my, you know, crossover team will definitely, you know, we'll make sure that we're talking with these other work groups so that when we're making that we'll help coordinate that, or at least make sure that information gets disseminated across to all the other parties.
So I have, what you have said reminds me of the statutory provision regarding criminal justice advisory committees, and it's ORS 1.851, and it directs the presiding judge of each Oregon judicial district to establish a local criminal justice advisory council to consider and address the methods of coordinating court, public defense, and related services and resources in the most efficient and cost-effective manner that complies with the constitutional and statutory mandates and responsibility of all participants. And in counties that have CJACs, you know, people are coming together on a regular basis to take a look at their system from every angle and make sure that they are achieving what they intend to be achieving. You know, maybe what you're suggesting is something along those lines, but in the juvenile arena, which is very much what the model court teams are doing, do model court teams exist in every county?
A model court team or an SCFCR team in most counties. There are some of the smaller counties where several counties combine together, so it's not an individual team. And in some counties that became SCFCR teams, that kind of took the lead with the model court team and them combined. So most counties have some type of at least one planning group, and I agree with you that there are counties that have the crossover initiative or the 0-3 initiative and have a number of different groups, but there, in my opinion, from what I've seen, there are some key stakeholders who are the people who are kind of tying these things together, and maybe it's because in smaller counties there are only so many people who can go around, but when you get to a county like the size of Lane County or Multnomah County or Marion County, there could be some sections that are fractured off. But still, you know, when I've gone to different team meetings or talked to people at the local level about different team meetings, there's usually always somebody just there. There's usually a judge or somebody on the judge's staff that's involved in most of these things.
What was the name of that? What was the number on that statute?
1.851, I think. Yep.
ORS 1. Well, you don't get it now.
You never cite 1.
Yeah.
And that would be another, I mean, if we were to try to, you know, pursue something like that, that would be another thing that there would be a fiscal on, because there would be a need for resources to convene these people together.
So I think
having participated in Multnomah County, it was just volunteer time over the lunch hour.
Did anybody take notes?
There weren't minutes.
I can certainly encourage all my district managers to make sure that they are connected to the efforts in their local county directed or focused on outcomes for children. And I think they are. I think they are. But I can't direct the costs to do it.
Well, but I don't. I think that DHS is probably, if you go to any of those meetings, is in my county anyway, they are at the table. But we don't necessarily have the DOJ. We don't necessarily have, you know, a representative from the court. It's DHS is always seems to be like they're at the table, but it's everyone else that isn't there, that doesn't know all these things that are happening. So I would, you know, to me, it's not DHS; it's the rest of us. You know, are, do we know what all these things are that are happening?
Well, do we include some sort of recommendation somewhere in here? And I can't reiterate enough how much I appreciate people putting this together. That it's highly recommended from all the stakeholders that there be a continuing ongoing commitment for stakeholders within each county to have, you know, ongoing meetings and regular communication, something of that nature, so that, because I will agree, Lane, we have so many things going on right now that sometimes it's hard to keep track of who's doing what. But to kind of...
Maybe this is just so, yeah. Maybe this loops back around into the pilot, because it seems to me that if we can get a good model out there and then hold it up as this is a way this can work, it really helps counties figure out what they're going to do.
And maybe what we could do is, in this revision to the introductory piece where we talk about the, you know, what the philosophical values are around permanency for children, that, you know, at home is best when appropriate supports and safety are available. And maybe there it can also be that the work group also believes that these outcomes will only be achieved through collaborative efforts on a local level for individual families and children. And there's a strong belief that counties should put a focus on all the participants in the juvenile dependency process coming together to achieve these outcomes, or to achieve positive outcomes for families. So instead of saying we recommend, it's part of the philosophy of how we believe the action will actually occur.
Yeah.
I like that.
That sounds
okay.
Great.
I like that
a lot.
Would it,
and then maybe we give
some examples of some of the things that are already going on, like the local SCFCRTs,
right.
Model court teams.
Yeah, and counties come together in unique ways, and everybody's doing something, but we really believe that only through collaboration and everyone being at the table
will
we get the best outcomes.
Would it also make sense in the process improvement document to add in a recommendation or a commitment to encouraging meetings at the local level among system stakeholders?
Where are you in this?
Process improvement. We each have individual goals. Page 12.
Okay.
We all have individual process improvement goals, but maybe we should have one that applies to everyone, which is committing to participation in meetings at the local level among system stakeholders to fill in the blank. I'm not sure if we want to make sure that the system is operating as efficiently as possible, or we can probably play with that language and come up with something that is meaningful.
I think you could just say commitment to collaborative participation in local efforts focused on juvenile dependency proceedings.
I think the concept is a little different, though, because it's not just participating in local efforts, which could very well be in silos. It's the commitment to intentionally coming together
to review those. Collaborative, not siloed, but collaborative efforts. I think collaboration implies you're working together, not in silos.
Right. No, I agree. I just meant that it's beyond coming together for an existing specified purpose. We can play with some language and put it in and see if it meets everyone's expectations.
I'm a little bit hesitant to put something in here that requires people to come together collaboratively, separate from other things that are going on around the juvenile court. That this is a focus for those groups, but we already have a lot of groups coming together around juvenile court dependency proceedings. I don't want us to make another one over here. I think there, where that's happening, they need to commit to be there and all the parties be there and deal with all the issues, permanency, you know, entry, timeliness, all that together. So however we word it, I just would like it not to be separate from the efforts already happening.
I think it's, Megan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but what I thought I heard you saying was to make sure the efforts aren't just all splintered all over the place, to make sure that there's that collaboration at a level kind of almost one up, so that we all know what's going on within our counties. And then that gets, I mean, I don't want to be a downer, then that almost requires more people to come together on a regular basis, and then how do you get the work done? to get, you know, to do your cases. That becomes...
Well, I think you can use an existing structure like Model Court or something that's already happening to be that entity that's that, and then we make sure that the DOJ and the DA and everyone is make sure that they're at the table with us. But I don't think we should create. I agree with Lois. Something that's new. Let's every county, and you know, Leola said every county has something different. Let's build on what's already there in every county, and just say, let's encourage that everyone is at the table.
This is Judge Sullivan again. I guess this is making me think. Maybe because I'm getting to the end of my professional life, but what the legislature may not really understand is the huge cultural shift that's occurred in this area from what it used to be like, and especially the way that the prosecution and defense functions interact in this area. It's very different than the way it was even 10 years ago, but you go back 20, 30 years, and some of us who are at this table do, it's so different that it's indescribable. And, this document reflects kind of an assumption of that other people may not be there. They may not understand what we're really doing here and how we're asked, how the roles have changed from an adversarial kind of proceeding. I mean, it went into court 30 years ago. First of all, DHS wasn't represented, and it was kind of them versus the world. And the judge was very detached in a lot of ways from what was going on. And a lot of people didn't have representation at all. If they did, it didn't have the... things are very, very different now. And I'm wondering if we've kind of assumed everybody's on the same page with that when maybe they're not, and we need to explain that a little bit better when we really talk about collaboration, what that really means.
So is that, Judge, would that be part of sort of the... that same introductory statement we're talking about, just acknowledging the changes in the juvenile dependency system
right.
over time, and that there is a certain level of collaboration around every court that's dealing with juvenile dependency, and that these are measures to kind of further that change.
Right.
Keep
Something
it going.
Along that line so that everybody... You know, because I think there's still people out there that are not committed to it, but that's really changed too.
Well, then back to the measurement piece.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought we kind of...
We just reiterate what we said that the measurement piece was, is so that we can capture that in this document.
What I wrote down is that on page 10, right above the legislative concept piece, so at the end of that section that's talking about the collaborative plans, is write a paragraph about overarching measures related to timely permanency and reduction of APLAs and how those measures are being tracked by DHS and by the courts right now in slightly different ways based on the data that we have, but that data is readily available to stakeholders to see and use at the state level as well as the local level.
And I mean, we can even put it in there that with the implementation of the new results-oriented management system, the general public and interested entities have access to the department's data on a county level, so they can look for themselves to see.
So since Amy's not here today, I would be willing to write that paragraph there to talk about the performance measure piece, and a paragraph up front that talks about the changing juvenile court process and the more collaborative focus of the juvenile court system and the local efforts that are happening on a collaborative model.
And I will send you some, just some verbiage around the philosophical positions around permanency, because I probably have that in documents already written.
Thanks.
Foster care is a very effective service, but it's designed to be short-term. And the longer it continues, the less effective it is in addressing the issues for kids in care. And that's why timely permanency is so important.
So is that good?
What is our deadline for this being a not draft product?
January,
right? Well, if we were going to present it to the committee at December Ledge Days, then December 10th. If you want to hold off and just make a verbal presentation, hand in the report, then January.
Yeah,
I'd rather have it done before.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're really close with just a few paragraphs.
Great, yeah.
Is that okay?
It's fine, but I mean, we're going to have plenty of other stuff to do
and
come January.
I do have this up if you'd like to do some live editing or documenting on the screen. So if you want to say, Chana, write this sentence, I will do that, but it's up to you. If you'd rather take it back and come back later with suggested language, that's just fine too. It's nothing like public editing and writing.
Yeah.
It's really
it's like building a bridge by committee. It's not always the strongest bridge.
Mm-mm.
But giving somebody something written that they can reflect off of is maybe better.
And I would be glad to just throw out a few paragraphs there that people can mark
Sounds
up
good.
And change.
Sounds good.
Good with that? Yeah, I think I still think that absent some language about making sure that in each county everybody knows what all the efforts are, we're just missing an opportunity.
That, Nancy. Tell me how we do that.
I don't think it's that hard. I think it's one conversation once a month with all the stakeholders in the room and a report from each committee that's operating.
Tell me how you get counties to do that.
Oh, I think that's why it's put in the process document as a commitment that will encourage those conversations to be happening at the local level. And it could be through a model court. I mean, it doesn't have to be a new structure. But I think it's important that at the local level, every entity understands what all the different efforts are. And I think that happens in some jurisdictions. It just doesn't happen in all jurisdictions. And so I just look at it as a missed opportunity. I think there would be something in here that describes that at least as an aspirational goal.
What if it were a separate bullet under each different entity? Even be the same bullet statement because there are some that try to participate in all of the various things going on, and I think it's beneficial for everybody to make that individual commitment as an entity. So maybe it's not just one overarching statement, it's an added bullet under everybody's, and for those that are doing it, then that's okay, but for those that aren't, then it's an encouragement.
Well, these are supposed to be things that our entities make a commitment that we will do. So doing that is like saying you have to do this versus us saying we will do this.
I think that it could be really hard for particular groups to make sure that there's somebody at all of those things. And so then maybe we're back to, is there one group that meets to accomplish that? And I don't know how you enforce it in each county. And sometimes there's multiple groups like that meeting. In Linn County, there's two different groups that meet. And it's really interesting the difference between what this group knows is going on and what this group knows is going on, and they're not necessarily the same thing. And each of those groups have, I don't know, 10 to 15 people that participate. So I don't even know how you'd get 30 people in a room.
Right, you don't. It's someone reporting to the others on what's happening.
On what's happening.
So
logistical challenge.
Maybe I add some language up front where we talk about the various collaborative efforts that are going on, and an acknowledgement that in some counties there are multiple things happening and there may not be the cross communication on those, and we would encourage as a practice that various work groups have reports on what other work groups are doing at a minimum, something like that.
I think it's important. It's a start.
But put it up in the intro part versus in the commitment piece.
I'd be happy with either.
I think I'd like it in the front more because it's kind of like an underlying philosophy of this communication is essential to get to really make all of these things that we're hoping people will implement work.
This is Joanne
from
the DOJ.
Hi. That's a great idea. Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Welcome back, Joanne.
It's been hard. It's been tough.
A little colder here?
Oh my gosh, a week ago I was sitting on a beach.
Yeah, you're not going to get a lot of sympathy.
I know, really.
I was going to say. Re-entry.
So, are we done with this for now? Should we talk about what's going to happen at 10:30?
That's good. Are we going to have something happen at 10:30?
Surprise! Yes.
Okay.
We will have Senator Cruz and Senator Krieger in the room for sure. There may be other members who have not responded to me who may show up.
Okay.
That's always fun. And Rep. Gomberg and Rep. Olson will be on the phone. And again, there may be other members joining on the phone who haven't responded to me. And none of the Senate Democrats will be able to join us. They're away on a caucus retreat. So they are interested. Multiples have emailed and said, please give me an update. Let me know what's going on. I'm interested in hearing about this group. Sorry, I can't make it. So, 10:30, we'll have some legislative members in the room and on the phone. They're excited to hear about your proposals. They could probably use a little bit of background, an overview of what the bill was, what the work you've been doing is, where you're at, before launching into a description of the recommendations.
And sorry, this is Joanne again. Can you just say the names? I think I heard you say Cruz and Krieger. And then who were the representatives?
Gomberg and Olson.
Thank you.
So this bill really came from CASAS at the beginning. So do you want to just
sure.
give like an overview of the bill and how we got here?
Sure.
And since you've been kind of the lead on the implementing the Washington pilot provisions here, mm-hmm. do you want to talk about that a little bit and move into the bill?
Yes, should there be a step before that, though, about talking about the best practices document? And maybe Judge Love could do that piece? Because I think that then feeds into, you know, here are all the best practices, but hard to...
Getting them all happening in one place.
At one time, challenging, and then that into the legislation. Is that okay?
Okay. Getting them all in one place at one time happening... gives us the information we need back to know if, in fact, we've hit the mark. Because
right.
I think we need to be able to tell them, or I think what a message I would want is that, you know, there's lots of work groups. I don't want to say this to them, but there's a lot of work groups that come together and create documents, and there isn't necessarily an outcome that comes back around to demonstrate whether or not what was in that document really was what we intended it to be, which is the best practice.
And we might want to try not to call it the best practices and
right.
call it the
right.
the collaborative action plan or
right.
I forget what we called it.
Process improvement document.
Yeah.
Process improvement commitments. But I think the pilot goes beyond what's in here.
Yes.
I mean, because this document was created with what we could do with an existing resources, and the pilot goes beyond.
Mm-hmm.
It's these plus the reduced caseloads, the increased judicial time, representation for DHS, you know. So there are those other pieces that make it.
Yep.
Oh.
So I'm going to talk about how we got here, why we're here, and then who's doing the presentation of the recommendations?
She's going to do the...
Whatever we're calling...
Process improvement
document. Process improvement document, and then the legislation. So I had two minor tweaks for the legislation. Do you want to hear those now, Shanna?
Yes, I do.
First one is on they're both on page two. Line three. The Judicial Department requires additional, let's strike, judges and referees. And replace it with judicial and staff resources. And then line 28 on the same page, increasing, and let's add judicial and staff resources, where judicial and staff resources is already there. And then strike for additional at the end of the line, and 29, strike judges and referees.
Great.
And I do believe the drafter is listening today, so maybe we'll keep our fingers crossed that we'll get this back very quickly.
Is that Melissa?
It is, the fabulous Melissa.
Somebody said they had additional changes too. I forget who it was.
So are we, we're not handing this document to anybody when they come in the room?
Well,
I'm just
I've
clarifying.
Sent it out to them already.
So oh, so they
yeah.
so they have this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's on all lists and
okay.
Yep.
That's why it says draft.
Okay.
Oh no.
Oh. I think it was my additional change, because it's still in here, that instead of Office of Public Defense Services, it should
That's
be
right.
the Public Defense Services Commission. So anywhere
That's
where
right.
it's, and then, yeah.
Anywhere it says that to make
yep,
that
just
change.
PDSC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yep, that's right. That's right.
So I had a question about this, because it's going to be difficult to fill in the blanks for appropriations without knowing what the pilot counties are going to be.
Yes.
I mean, it could be vastly different if it's Multnomah County versus Malheur County. So are we going to, how are we going to figure that out? Because we're all going to have to do a fiscal for this.
It seems like we should have a few, we should price cost out for a few different counties that we think that we all agree would be good counties, and we should pick a, you know, rural, larger, and then we have different pieces to plug in depending on what resources are available.
So what the current counties are, you're starting in Lynn, right?
We're in Lynn and Yamhill.
Just those two. Are you anticipating more based on that effort?
If we can self-fund another county, we will, but we don't know yet.
Okay.
And we are in our policy option packages. We asked for funding for Clackamas and Multnomah, because those would be large counties to contrast to our existing small counties, but doesn't.
In addition to if this goes?
Right. Right. I mean, we didn't know if this would go or not at the time we were drafting policy option packages. So that's what we, if we were to proceed independently and we were, and there were funding available, those are two counties that we have priced.
Multnomah and Clackamas.
Yes.
And you would see those as priority counties for this?
Those are good counties because they're larger counties, and we could contrast results in a large county versus small counties, and they're either, you know, long stays in foster care or large caseloads. we were looking at a variety of metrics, but I think there are a lot of other counties that would rise to priority counties, but I think it would be important to sit down and look at the data again, as we did when we were selecting our first counties. You know, we worked with both of you to learn about what your data was showing, and I would think we would want to do that again with updated data.
So should we try to do that before the end of the year, so that we kind of have at least a couple different scenarios of
I think that would be
what
helpful.
The counties might be.
Sure.
Amy can find time for us to meet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the question is who wants to be part of that conversation, because with this effort, you know, Kasa, you might want to have. We have a system partner meeting scheduled, don't we? And are you not invited to those?
Don't we have... We have Aaron, who's been attending the pilot meetings. Is that what you were talking about?
The system partner meetings that we have scheduled quarterly. I'll look at one that. Oh, right, it is Erin. That's why. CASA is at the table.
Yeah.
This is not you.
When's the next meeting?
Well, I was just looking for that. I don't think we have one before the end of the year. I'm having a hard time finding it at all. Maybe I'll get an email. I'll ask Amy to set up a partner meeting so that we can identify counties. You know, I'm not. Does it need to get done before the end of the year? It probably could happen. I'm just thinking about timing. If we can get it before the end, if we can do it before the end of the year, I think that's great. But realistically speaking, January would be okay too. Right?
Yeah. Before, I'd like to have it out of the way before session starts.
More you can get done before February, the better. But.
So, should we assume that these four counties are off the table then? The four you've identified? No?
Okay. Not necessarily. I mean, it could go either way. We could talk about it.
So would that be a discussion amongst this larger group or a couple of members from this group going to have that discussion? If you're going to meet again, that's great. We'll make that a topic of conversation, but just want to make sure I don't have all of you in a room
somewhere
talking
else
about it.
So it's part of our pilot, it's our pilot program. Mm-hmm. We have a regular quarterly partner meeting where we look at their data and we talk, and whether or not that would, if we were in that group looking at data and trying to narrow down pilot counties,
I don't know that it would be the public meetings laws
better than I do, and if we need to have it recorded then we would. It's an effort that we have going that is separate and aside from this.
And if it's a discussion about your effort, that's different than a discussion about this group's effort.
Right.
And so this group could be there discussing that group's effort, but I just want to be careful.
Yeah.
So I want to know what we're planning to do around this meeting. And we don't need to decide that today by any means. But.
Right. And it may be that the question, that one of the key factors is whether or not that group is making a decision,
mm-hmm,
versus collecting information to then provide to this bigger group,
mm-hmm,
for consideration. And I think as long as we're collecting information to bring back to this group, it's probably okay.
Probably.
But we should make sure that that's the case. Should we take a break?
Yes.
Is that the...
Sounds good.
It's Sullivan, I'm on the snow in Eastern Oregon. And why don't we go around and introduce ourselves to our guests? Why don't we start with those on, they're off on the phone.
So, yeah, Joanne Southey from Oregon DOJ.
State Rep. David Gomberg over in Lincoln City.
Lori Fellows from the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office.
Okay, I think that's everybody on the phone, and then those who are in, present in the room. Oh, did we just add someone else on the phone?
I'm Betsy Welch. I'm back on the line.
Great. And then those who are in the room?
Megan Schultz with CASA of Lane County.
Lois Day, Child Welfare Director.
Wayne Krieger, State Rep.
Jeff Cruz, State Senator.
Valerie Love, Lane County Juvenile Judge.
Leola McKenzie, Judicial Department.
Nancy Cozine, Office of Public Defense Services.
Lene Garrett, CASA of Marion County.
We want to welcome our guests here, and the first thing we're going to do is explain who we are and what we've been working on for the last year, and I think the CASA representative is going to do that.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
So, thank you for coming and to hear what we've come up with and what we've been working on all year long. This bill, House Bill 3363, came last session in 2013. The Oregon CASA Network brought it forward, and it was based on listening to our CASA volunteers across the state and things that they were really frustrated with in terms of trying to move children out of the system as quickly and as safely as possible. And through the process of this piece of legislation, what we found is that all of our partners that are represented here at the table today are working really, really hard. But sometimes when we're working hard, some of the things that we're doing or not doing are creating a delay. And so this work group really gave us the opportunity to sit down and say, from the very beginning of a case, right from shelter, what is happening that may cause a delay right from the very beginning all the way through till when, you know, we can get the case closed? So what are the delays along the way, and what are each of us doing or not doing that may attribute to that delay? So a lot of the work was really looking up front at a lot of data that the courts capture, DHS captures, so that we were basing our conversations and our deliberations on the data. And then it was really a lot of putting your egos on the, laying them aside and saying, okay, what are we doing that's causing this delay, and what are we willing to do, what commitments are we willing to make to try and alleviate that delay? So that's how we got here today. And I think I'm going to let Judge Love talk about what we were able to accomplish.
So I think that's correct. We all had to put our egos aside and really dig in and talk about what it is that we are doing, not doing, that's causing these delays. And we had to identify, you know, impediments to timely permanency for these kids. And so the impediments that we identified are listed in this draft report, and a number of them, of course, I think require some additional resources, but we did identify that there's a lack or delay of services for parents and children. So trying to make sure there's enough services for parents and children in a timely fashion. Often parents and children may have to wait for services, especially when we're in rural districts. There may not be as many services available. Every county is very different. Visitation is another challenge, I think, as well. There's, I think, often a lack of resources for safe visitation, especially at the outset. What can we do to look at an increased quality and quantity of visits between children and their families? particularly in those early stages of the case, and so that can be an impediment as well. Often the visits are occurring in a very sterile setting that's not natural for these families. We also identified as an impediment.
So in some cases that may be appropriate.
Right. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that, but looking at a spectrum of what's available.
Right.
We also identified as an impediment a lack of system resources, so this really does cut across the board. We can look at a lack of system resources for underfunded public defense, judicial, and child welfare systems. So if we look at attorneys who are representing children and families, their workloads are
massive.
I'm trying to think of a bigger word than that, but I think massive is a great word for it. You know, there's so much to do in each one of these cases for, I think, everybody that's working on this. And so they are really, I think of often of the attorneys in Lane County, we see each other all the time because we're always in court, and I have to wonder how they get their work done, reading, preparing, meeting with clients, doing all those sorts of things. So it's very evident. In some counties, this impediment results in not having lawyers available for parents and children at those initial hearings, where there can be a lot of, I think, productive work done. And so high caseloads as well for these lawyers can contribute to scheduling delays, which, you know, results in a delay for children and families. If there are hearings at the jurisdictional stage that are contested and we have scheduling problems for attorneys, then that can, you know, have things set up way beyond when we should be taking care of these jurisdictional hearings. I think the same parallels for judicial availability to try the cases, depending on what resources you have in each county available. Sometimes those docketing slots are just not there to get the cases heard as quickly as they should be. And it's important, I think everybody would agree, to have a consistent judge with each family, but that can also limit the time you have available to get to hearing. So that's a delay. I think everybody knows child welfare staff have caseloads that really are beyond what would be appropriate. And so there's so many things that each caseworker has to do with each child, parents, all of the family, for permanency purposes, and they're limited time, I think, in any given day doesn't allow for as much to occur as should in the early stages. DHS is also not regularly represented at each hearing, as I think you know, and that varies from county to county, but cases can be delayed if I think adequate legal representation for that agency is not present. For example, it could be that there's a case that's not prepared properly enough if somebody wants a change of plan, so then you have to set another hearing to get everything together to do that. So the lack of consistent representation is an impediment. We also identified as an impediment a lack of adequate education and training. This area of law is very complex. I think it's important. We've talked in our group a lot about the key of collaboration in this whole process and ensuring timely permanency for children that are in the system. And so the law changes, the requirements change, and so it's essential that everybody that's a stakeholder and involved in this process have appropriate education and training on a regular basis. Things change frequently. So one of the things we did after we spent a lot of time identifying the impediments is come up with some recommendations that are towards the back of the report. And so we identified a number of current initiatives that we have in place, but one of the things that we spent quite a bit of time on is at Appendix 1 at the back of the report after page 11, which are stakeholder commitments for improving the juvenile dependency system. So things that we talked about that we identified from all the stakeholders that we could be looking at trying to implement now to work towards the goals of this piece of legislation. And so they're listed, you know, for the courts. We talked about scheduling shelter hearings at a time that allows attorneys to be appointed and appear. Again, that importance of having that, I think, meaningful work occur at that first hearing for parents and children. Regular review of the adequacy of the visitation and plan, and for siblings if those siblings are not able to be placed together. looking at getting parents into services earlier as opposed to post-jurisdiction, if attorneys are in agreement with that. If there are counties where multiple judges are handling juvenile cases, make sure there's guidelines so that that same judge can keep track of that family and hear that case on a regular basis. And look at setting a review on a more frequent basis than we might be doing now, so every 90 days. Some are not, we're not able to have reviews for 6-month periods, and that's a long time and a lot can happen, and that's really too long for kids to have to wait for people to be checking in. Citizen Review Board, looking at adequacy of visitation plans, and again, for parent and child, if the siblings aren't placed together. I can share that one of the things with our busy docket and lane that the Citizen Review Board can be looking at these cases more frequently than I can and come up with a lot of really valuable recommendations and insight that may prompt the court to call a hearing sooner to try to move the case along. Looking at concurrent planning, making sure that we're doing that ahead of time and not waiting to see if the reunification is going to work out. And the Citizen Review Board can help to highlight expedited permanency hearing need when appropriate. So, judge, this case should get in sooner. We can recommend that you should take a look at it now. For attorneys, for children and parents, a commitment to practicing in accordance with the Oregon State Bar standards of representation for parents and children in dependency proceedings, and working with local courts and juvenile justice stakeholders to create specialized dockets to implement systems that eliminate delays. Again, that collaboration piece is really important. State's attorneys, one of some of the things identified for commitments, develop and be familiar with standards for proper legal service on parents. That proper legal service occurring earlier can result in less delay. Sometimes when parents haven't been served or identified properly, that results in a delay to obtaining jurisdiction, which ultimately is a longer time for the child and family to be involved in the system. Again, ensure effective legal service in each case. Department of Human Services, looking at clearly stating the conditions for return. What are those conditions of return? And let's look at making sure it's in language that is understandable by everybody that that is involved in the process. A regular monitoring and updating of the visitation plan for parents as well as siblings. Timely notification to the court of a requested change in plan and requested hearing if required. And discovery is another thing that we talked about quite a bit to ensure that everyone's getting the information in a timely manner regularly so that we know what's going on with cases so there's not delay. CASA, I think particularly being involved as a party to the case, what can they do? Looking at monitoring things such as the relative search, CANS assessment, CRB recommendations, looking at things to ensure timely resolution of the case, making sure that our youth at 14 and above have been referred to ILP services, so starting that process earlier to better support the older youth that are in our system, make sure they participate in permanency roundtables or family finding processes, document home visits, school visits, client contact, observations of parent and or sibling visits, making sure all those things that are supposed to be occurring are occurring and how are those going. Ensuring that the case plan and permanency plan has been identified, that that plan is being implemented, and emphasizing important appropriate visitation for family preservation. So there's a lot of things that we came together and talked about that we could be looking at as stakeholders doing now to improve outcomes for these children and families. Lots of education and training. I think that I don't need to repeat all of those. I've kind of read through the earlier section, but every stakeholder really does need regular training on the law, regular training, I think, from a multidisciplinary perspective, because one of the things we spent a lot of time talking about is the importance of ensuring that we kind of all know what each other is doing, because this work really does require that multidisciplinary collaborative approach. Otherwise, there's a lot of entities, you know, working sometimes at different directions, and there can be so many programs and things going on within each county and statewide that for the benefit of, I think, the goal that everyone's trying to achieve, which is timely permanency, not having kids in substitute care longer than they absolutely need to be, that we really have to work together as a group to ensure that there's that that understanding of each person's role, what they are doing, what they can do, and how everybody can work together collaboratively to improve these outcomes for kids and families. So that's my long-winded summary of what we did. So I appreciate that you're taking the time to be here today.
Can I just add one piece, Judge Love? These were the things we felt we could do within the current budget. They're budget neutral. So that was the, we'd spent a lot of time on what we could do without additional resources. We spent some time on what we could do with additional resources as well.
But I think we did really work quite hard on trying to find things that we could do given today's reality and today's resources.
Lois, how, when we're talking resources in the big picture, how much of the resources we're talking about get into the issues of shared service models, where the state's putting up money, the county's putting up money, that sort of thing? Is there much of that in here?
That's not necessarily in here, but I think, I wouldn't be able to respond really very coherently to your question today, but there are examples around the state of different entities putting braiding funds, if you will, for an outcome.
Right. And the reason I bring that up is I think we're going to be seeing over the next couple of years a lot of, especially the timber-dependent counties, kicking stuff back to the state that, I mean, that's just going to have to be a reality because they don't have any money. So I guess I just want to see if this movement is impacted any way by that. So
It could well be. I mean, we certainly, the district attorney's role in the juvenile dependency process has been a piece that we've been talking about and looking at lately, because it's different district attorneys are able to participate in different levels in the initial process because of funding.
Projects that have more attorneys available for kids and families, you're not saying you can do that within existing dollars?
No, that would be part of the conversation around what we could do with more dollars.
I had reached out to Kate Brown a few months ago about wanting her involvement in this, because if you remember back in the day, that was when we had that whole series of bills. The one bill we didn't get was additional dollars for representation. And Kate would like to be involved in making that push again. And so I think that's something that's very critical, that, you know, I think without the right representation on the front end, I'm not sure how you eliminate all the delays. So So Wayne and I are both interested in taking a hard look at that and seeing if we can get some more resources in. And Kate might be helping.
We don't, at this time, really have an understanding of what that number looks like. Is it 10 million? Is it 20 million? What is it?
So I think Nancy was going to talk about just that issue, the increased representation issue.
Decade ago, we put a target of 20 out there, I think, so.
Right.
So I don't know that we have a summary number. I think you all are aware that the department's been in conversation with the Attorney General's office around the cost of representation for the department, and I think that we'll have information for you as we get closer to session, but right now I don't think we have a firm number.
Well, we've been aware. I'm trying to think when we went, when did we go to, you went to Texas with us, the chief, October 15th of 2009. I can't remember where it was in Texas, but it was in Texas.
It's a big state.
And when all these chief justices were there, and all the work groups, you get done hashing this thing up, it comes back to the same thing. Legal representation, adequate and competent. And we've known it. But at some point, we have to make the step forward, because it affects people's lives beyond dollars and cents, these kids, families.
Well, it's quite simply a matter of having all of the information presented to the court at the first hoop, because if it's not, the things you find out after the fact, you can't use. So I personally think that's something we should figure out a way to push really hard on, is getting those resources on the front end.
So this might be a good time for me to share with you some of the efforts that our office has been making and the draft information about the draft legislation that we've created. I think you both were present, but correct me if I'm wrong. We had the Washington State Office of Defense Services come down and present their results as a consequence of improved representation. And in the intervening months, our office has had an opportunity to launch its program In Washington, they focus solely on representation of parents. We've been able to focus on both parents and children. We have two counties, Yamhill County and Linn County. We launched in August of this year, and we have capped caseloads, increased training resources. We're adding social workers as available resources for the attorneys. We're calling them case managers, but they all have experience in social work, and so they're available to help clients get connected with the agency and with services. And we will be coming and sharing with you outcomes of that program as it proceeds. We're, as you know, only a few months in right now, but we're already seeing some really good outcomes in terms of that initial representation in the pilot counties, which has been really helpful. The sharing of discovery before the initial hearing has been really helpful. Those are things we've been able to accomplish just by starting the pilot up in those counties. But as we talked in this group about that Washington model, in I think it was June of this year, we started talking about what it would look like if we actually had a few counties where everyone had full representation. And so the idea that the court had sufficient resources to avoid docketing problems and scheduling delays, that attorneys had the resources that they have available to them in the pilot program, that DHS has full representation. And we created legislation, and that's what you'll see on page 18 of your handout. It's draft legislation that that would appropriate to each entity funding to create, I think, what we might term the perfect county, to see if we really can make significant gains and demonstrate significant results by investing adequately in every single component of the dependency system. So in terms of your question about overall cost, we have a commitment, I think, to work together to identify some different counties that would be a good place for this kind of pilot. And I can visit with you separately about the costs that we have been able to ascertain for different counties. We have not come up with a statewide, we haven't come up with a figure about what it would cost to implement our pilot statewide. We're just going at it one county at a time. But I can talk to you about what it would cost to reduce caseloads and things like that. That is a figure we've looked at, and we have some policy option packages to address caseload reductions.
Well, intuitively, I think to the entire system, this is a money saver. By doing it right and efficiently and getting them out. But our ability to demonstrate that is somewhat subjective, you know. I do like the idea of pilots, I think. So, you know, then we can prove it up. So, don't you think, Wayne?
I agree.
So where is this now?
Right here. It's a House Judiciary Bill.
Okay, good.
Good place for it.
Yeah.
So
he may be on that committee.
Maybe. Somebody here is.
I just want to make sure that the other piece doesn't get lost, and that's full representation for DHS. This would be the pilots here would be just full representation for DHS and the other stakeholders within those pilot counties. But there still is that outgoing issue of DHS not having representation across the state and other counties, and they're working on that via the budget note, and that's still a priority for many of our judges across the state.
Well, it should be. I mean, there are times when the caseworker is the only one in court, and they're put in a no-win situation, and it's not what they should be
right.
doing. You know, I fully understand that.
Well, they're not trained to be in the courtroom doing legal issues, and we shouldn't expect them to. And because they're doing it, some things have gone awry.
Yeah, but it's just not having the right resources in the right place. So you're going to present that to us as well, huh?
Not through this particular venue, but I do believe we'll have something in time for session.
Is that just going to be part of your budget, or is it going to be a separate?
Right now, I believe it's a separate piece. And it really is, it's not up to me.
Right, I mean, it's your sense that it'll be in the GRB or?
I think we sent something to the governor and he'll make a decision around how to present that. And we're having continuing conversation with Department of, you know, with the Attorney General's office around what are some, I mean, there's some things we can also do to create savings in the way the representation occurs to mitigate the cost of the representation for the department. So we're trying to work through that in time for session.
Well, Aaron just needs to come down hard on the governor and say, do this, so.
I'll take for that.
Should have taken some of that marijuana profit and put it into this part of the city.
There's no profit in marijuana.
Oh, Lord.
Sometimes people in their infinite wisdom do some strange things. Just my opinion. Okay, so.
How much time did you spend? How many meetings did you have?
We've been meeting for a year.
Off and on for a year and 8 or 9, 10 meetings or something?
Yeah, that's probably a good estimate.
I know the year that we did it with Kate Brown, that's that one summer I drove 6,500 miles back and forth from Dover Beach.
Oh, we were here all the time.
And it takes time. It just does. But if the people who are involved in the system and legislators who are concerned about the issue don't take that time, then nothing happens. This issue and one other is the only reason I ran again. I'd rather be home. Been here too long, and you've been here too long, too.
I know. But I'm not done yet, so.
Oh, I know.
Well, we're glad you're here and that you're interested.
I told myself years ago, as soon as we've fixed health care and education, I'll quit, and I don't think we're quite there yet. So, I'm serious about Kate Brown's involvement in this, okay? She's a hell of a resource on these things, and she's got a bully pulpit, okay? And, you know, I think it was one of her frustrations a decade ago when we didn't get the funding for what we wanted. And I want that funding issue to be a front burner issue. Because I don't think we can do all this without that. No matter how you adjust within current budget, it's going to take more resources to make this happen.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and we got so much money that, you know.
Would it be, Chana, would it be a had the other work group that's just starting up in December on some of this stuff. Why don't we ask Kate Brown, we had some of the AG's office there before, but it might be good for her personally to be there.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get a stronger advocate than Kate on this issue. So,
and I think the Speaker of the House is a little bit sensitive to this issue, too.
Yeah, I don't think Tina's going to be a problem.
So she might help us a little bit.
I'm going to talk to her in a couple weeks, so.
Okay.
About some things. Yeah, Dave, how are you doing?
I am still here, thank you. And you're going to be around until we fix health and healthcare and education?
Well, that was the original plan, Dave. I don't know how well that's going to work.
But. I'm fearful we're going to have you with us a long time. But that being said, two things. First of all, the legislative concept that's in your draft report. Unless I missed some conversation, what's the plan? Do we need that dropped? Will we need sponsors? Will it be introduced by a committee?
I think it's going to be a committee bill in House Judiciary Committee.
Okay.
And probably it's better being a committee bill at this point, yep. I would think, don't you?
The only other comment I had is for your final report, I'd appreciate it if you could actually list the members that were appointed to the task force.
Okay, good idea.
And that's all I've got from the sunny Oregon coast.
No, I think somebody joined on the phone in the middle of Judge Love's review.
Hi, yeah, this is Madeline Dardo from Representative Williamson's office.
Okay, thank you.
So in y'all's opinion, this is a pretty much finished document.
It has a few changes to be made to it. Okay. Just very minor word changes.
Okay. Okay.
But another draft back, and it is in substantially the correct form.
Okay, I would suggest, even though it's a House bill, that the Senate committee get copies during days. Because I don't think Floyd's going to have a problem with this at all.
No,
so.
On the agenda to come up in,
okay,
as a probably 10 to 15 minute report,
okay,
before the Joint Committee.
Okay. And we just need to figure out the dollars. And that would be...
Well, the cost, of course, is going to be big, but you, as you said, you can't measure the long-term savings. It's hard to qualify that, quantify it.
No, but Washington has demonstrated some savings, and so we can extrapolate there and use the examples of, and they're doing half a loaf, and we're proposing a full loaf, so we could make some assumptions based on that to what the long-term savings would be. Because they've been at it long enough now that they've got a data line.
Mm-hmm.
So having that would be very helpful just to make our case. But having said that, if we've got that data set that shows long-term savings and we're doing a pilot to allow us to demonstrate, it makes it an easier sell than trying to do a everybody all at once. So...
I think we had committed, we have a little more work to do in terms of providing these estimates of the cost that it would take to do a pilot or a couple of pilots, counties.
One thing that might be helpful is we're going to set up a meeting to have that conversation, to look at data from all of Oregon's counties and identify counties that would be good, viable pilot counties.
Okay.
If there are criteria that the legislature would be interested in having that group consider, you know, that would be good for us to know. So some of the things they looked at in Washington, time to permanency,
entries, exits,
thank you, reunifications. And so we'll be looking at all of that data, but if there's something in particular, and I'll be looking at caseloads too.
Well, I mean, bottom line, you know, some of the standard things on a pilot is small, medium, large, that sort of thing, geographical differences and all of that, that does need to be there. But I might also suggest on the front end of the pilots that if for example, there was a county with absolutely no resources, that they might not be a good candidate for a
like
pilot.
Like Curry County?
Well, I mean, you know, let's, you know, I mean, we're trying to, we would, you know, we need more money, but by the same token, we aren't going to get all we want. So those places where some addition would get us to the point we want might look at them more favorably, I would think.
And
it's kind of the rich getting richer. I understand that, but still. Yeah.
Which subcommittee this might go to, Ways and Means?
Subcommittee and Ways and Means.
Public Safety or Human Services?
Wow. I would push it towards Public Safety.
One of your co-chairs there is Rep. Williamson.
Yeah.
Who's LA's on the phone.
Right.
And I'm sure we should interest Senator Winters in this as well.
Yes, yes. So, human resources sub is going to be a mess as it is without throwing this into the mix. Okay. So, and this is more of a judicial side anyway, so that's where it needs to be. So, agreed? Okay.
Absolutely.
Any questions for the committee? Anything you...
Well, I'm going to go through your report,
right.
You know, read that a couple times. And normally, I, when you read something like that with the idea of it was quiet around you, and I got my little red pen and I'm marking little notes down. Questions come up, things come up.
Right.
So we, this morning before you all came in, we agreed to add some additional information in the report. So it won't substantially change, but it'll give it a little more context. So if you want to go ahead and read that, of course, but we'll be providing you with a more up-to-date copy.
Okay. I listened to you for a few minutes on the TV.
Yeah,
okay,
until
good.
I interrupted you.
Yeah.
You never know who's watching.
I'm wondering if it would be helpful if we could set up something during days with a couple folks on that sub. You know, Representative Williamson and maybe Winters, and to just have a conversation and kind of get their temperature. What do you think?
It wouldn't hurt.
Wouldn't hurt.
Wouldn't hurt at all.
Were you thinking of during legislative days?
That was my thought, but yeah.
You can get them a copy of this.
7th, 8th, and 9th, I think, something like that.
Yep.
You can get them a copy of this to look at.
Right.
Talk to them briefly.
A small group.
This is Madeline Durgan from Representative Williamson's office. I'm
right.
Happy to help set that up.
Okay, because I think your boss is going to be a key player in this.
Yeah.
She's interested in the subject. That always helps.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. But she just, you know, I don't like, you know, you're doing all this work over here, but then it ends up on that person's plate. It'd be nice if they knew it was coming at them before it got there. So, yeah.
Madeline, did you have any questions you wanted to ask or more information you needed?
I'm good. Thank you, though.
I think that would be a good next step, so, don't you? Okay.
We'll have to see what our governor's budget looks like, and what are the revenue sources.
Well, that's part of my concern, because he's shifting a whole bunch of money around here and there that I'm not sure we actually have, so, I mean, you know, like I heard $400 million for early learning, and I'm going, okay, where the heck's that money coming from, sort of thing. You know, it's like we don't even have enough teachers in the classroom right now. You know, it's kind of okay. Well, of course, that's just rumor at this point, because I haven't been out, but, so.
So, are there any other juvenile court or child welfare issues or areas that you're thinking about that you want to talk with us about?
I don't want to muddy the waters too much. I think getting this off the ground is going to facilitate everything else down the road.
Yeah,
I agree.
Exactly right.
And so I let's not muddy the waters. Let's keep the focus. Then once we've got this going, then we can fit all the other pieces in. I mean, there's other things, obviously, but if you don't have your baseline right, it's hard to do anything else right, and we just need to get the baseline. You know, the front end of the process is where the things need to be, and they're not, so. You've taught me well. Yeah, this is, Wayne has been so passionate about this for so long, it's beyond belief. So, and somehow he drugged me into it. I'm not sure how that happened. But.
You were drugged pretty easily.
That's true. Okay, I think we've got a good starting point.
Thank you.
And thank you for your work, too.
Yeah, thank you for the
great
work.
Great to talk to people who get it.
When you get it all combined on a piece of paper, we don't have to do the work that you did to get it there. That makes a lot of difference in what we can get done in our position.
Okay. All we need now is numbers. So, and I, you know, getting some good data on Washington is going to be very helpful in making our case. So, you know, a decade ago, we were looking at some pretty skinny numbers out of the state of Washington, but, you know, they did it based on an assumption, and the assumption is proven. So, you know.
If you have an interest in hearing from them again in any particular, in any setting, I'm happy to work with them and get them down here. They've been very gracious in sharing their time.
Yeah, they were good when they came down.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've got to keep in mind, we aren't very smart, but we like to steal good ideas from other people. So, so well, thank you for this.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
And we'll try to figure out where Representative Olson is. He was in the traffic division. They're normally late anyway. But
so, okay. So, and we are going to be talking about this in during days. Good. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gomberg and Madeline.
You're very welcome. Thanks for your good work.
Thank you.
All right, and I think that completes our agenda. Is there anything else we need to discuss today?
Judge, I think I have three things.
Oh, I have a question.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The first one is, who from this group is going to present during the legislative days? I think some, you know, who's going to do that?
So I'm wondering if when we have our, if we want to have a quick partner meeting before legislative days, or maybe we just establish it now. It's very soon.
Yeah, there's not much time to meet before leg days.
It's true. And that was exactly my question.
What's your other two questions?
So that was the first one. The second one is, they talked about a meeting with Representative Wilson and Senator Winters, and it sounds like Madeline is going to help maybe you arrange that. So who from this group needs to be involved in that during legislative days as well? And then the third one, Kate Brown, who's going to be reaching out to her and sharing this information with her?
I would be happy to reach out to Kate Brown.
Is that Nancy?
It is Nancy.
Okay.
So I wasn't clear that they wanted us to meet with Representative Williamson and Senator Winters, or if they were going to talk to them. Do you believe that they were saying?
The impression I got was the two of them, Senator Winters, Representative Williamson, and a few members from this group in a small group setting.
Okay.
To lay out what the proposal is and specifically to ask them what numbers they might want to see from you guys and what they need to know in order to have success in their subcommittee, assuming it stays with the same membership.
I'm certainly happy to participate, and it seems like we should probably have someone from
the two of you. Yeah, I believe I can participate. I mean, I think I can certainly speak to the need for representation. That's not a new conversation for us with legislators. I need to see what our governor says around the budget and those sort of things. So I'd be neutral on this particular bill, but can certainly give information around the Department of Representation and best practice and the tenets in the report, and that we're trying to push forward with the draft legislation.
I'm sorry, this is Joanne. There's another noise coming through, so all I hear is a game or something.
Sorry, I didn't take it off mute. I'll go to the other room.
Oh, okay.
It's breaking up for me, too. Okay,
yeah,
is that better?
Perfect. So, Lois, maybe you could just restate what you were saying. That would be helpful. Thank you.
Oh, I was just saying that I'm certainly happy to go and talk about the work we did in this subgroup and sort of the philosophies around representation and permanency for children in the court system, but that the department would be neutral on the bill. So, but I can talk about really what went into our work here, what we feel is important for kids. What about you, Leola?
I can do the same thing from the judicial side. I do think that, you know, judicial kind of went on the record last session about the critical need for counsel for child welfare in these proceedings. So, you know, I would probably be bringing that up as something in addition to the LC. And I am more than willing to sit back if you would like to be a part of that conversation, Judge, since you're relatively close by.
If somebody thinks it would be beneficial for me to participate, I'm happy to. But either direction is fine.
I always think it's good for legislators to hear about people that are doing the work. I think it's helpful to them. And to hear from a sitting juvenile court judge, independency matters might be something they would appreciate.
So then the only thing would be, knowing my schedule, is to find out as soon as possible when it would be that I would...
What are we talking about as far as doing this?
During legislative days, I believe they're talking about having a small meeting put together. And I don't know...
When would that be? In January? Or?
It's in December.
8th, 9th, and 10th.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know your availability, Judge Sullivan.
Well, it's opened up quite a bit because my death penalty case is going to be delayed. So I do have the possibility of being available in December, assuming that this doesn't happen again with the weather. And I'm going to have more time in January and February than I thought, too. But I need to schedule it now. But I do have days that we were going to be in jury selection for my death penalty case, and we're not going to be now. So I do have some days. If you can tell me when, then I could probably get over.
And I just would, I know I was trying to find a half day block yesterday to set something over to, and my first half day free block wasn't till the day before Christmas Eve. But if it's not, if there are days where I don't have special set things that I have to hear, I can get coverage. So it's just sort of that. There's a lot of moving pieces, but
their schedules right now, the legislators' schedules are really starting to fill up, so it might be a bit of a puzzle getting everyone at the same place at the same time. So I'll work with Madeline. I'll get in touch with her this afternoon and find out.
Yeah, you can get me a window opportunity, and so I could probably schedule it.
Yep, I'll try to get 4 or 5 open times. Send them out to the smaller group and see if there's one time.
Yeah, the other thing I was thinking about is if maybe Judge Collins would be available, since they're the pilot and he is so articulate and wonderful to talk with people about this. He might be a resource too.
Yeah, and Judge Murphy is the other.
Right, the other one, and they're right there, so.
And representation has been one of the key issues that Justice Brewer has been concerned about and working towards, and he might be willing to be a part of that discussion as well.
Well, it sounds like we need to get some dates and then be in touch that way and figure out who can cover what and go from there.
So you'll send us an email with possible dates and times that work for everybody else, and we'll see which ones we can do. Okay, so did we decide who was going to do the joint committee report?
Do we even know when it is?
It is December 10th. The meeting starts at 2 p.m. We haven't worked out the order in which people will be presenting. There's likely to be a one-hour presentation prior to any of the smaller reports, so approximately 3 o'clock is when that portion will get started. We go until 5. and we currently had 8 to 10 presentations to get through from various people wanting to report. So I think I can get you 15 minutes, but it may shift a little bit, and I can't tell you exactly what time that will be until we get a little closer.
You said the 10th?
10th, yes.
Sounds like
Wednesday the 10th.
I couldn't hear much of any of that, so.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll try to speak up a little more. It's Ledge Days will be Wednesday the 10th for House and Senate Judiciary Committees meeting jointly. We'll begin at 2 p.m. with an hour-long presentation. So this presentation will be sometime after 3 p.m.
On the 10th of December?
Correct.
Okay. Well, is that a date that you'd like me there then?
I think the
yeah.
Okay, well, let me see what I can do about that one. Because I can fly in the morning and if we're going to be in the afternoon like that. So let me see what I can do about that one.
I just sent my judicial assistant an email to ask about the 3 days to see if we have anything special that I can't get out of if needed.
If the committee report is on the 10th, would it be, it seems like it would be efficient to try and schedule the meeting with Representative Williamson,
mm-hmm.
Williamson and Senator Winters that same day.
That day, but
I know.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. It totally
right.
makes sense.
Right.
But doesn't always for them.
I know.
Let's see if I can get Madeline.
So, Nancy, do you want to be a part of that presentation since you've probably got the most information around the existing pilot?
I'm happy to. If we have 15 minutes, maybe we do something similar to what we just did with it broken out into the 3 pieces.
Yeah. So Judge Sullivan and Judge Love can be there, you and
mm-hmm.
Megan.
Well,
I think you have 15 minutes, and I think
your net's real broken up. Leola, I can hear you the best. Can you summarize for me what what's been decided on that? Then it's me and Nancy as well.
The discussions are still happening.
Okay.
So it hasn't been decided yet. Judge Love is going to see if she's available, and if she is, then she'll come as well.
I just got an email back. So the only day I can't be available for something on those, the 8th, 9th, and 10th, is the afternoon or is the 9th, because I have something that we had to special set. Otherwise, I can get coverage for the other days.
I was just saying, since it was the sort of CASA bill,
right.
CASA's presence might be good. But it's up to you guys.
Yeah. I think that was a nice way to lead off.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we had enough time. I mean, you know,
sometimes
to get to the meat of, you know, if we only have 15 minutes, you know, to really get to the meat of the LC and the, you know, the best practice document that we came up with.
If I came over the night of the night and we could get together in the morning and be ready to go and then do the presentation in the afternoon, would that work?
Can you meet in the morning with Judge Sullivan?
Yes.
I mean, sometimes
yes.
it's just a matter of having someone at the table who can respond to
okay.
questions, too. It's everybody doesn't have to have a speaking part necessarily, but
right.
it
okay.
did flow well. And they'll have the report.
It's good for them to have the context, and,
okay.
and this was the CASA network bill, so.
It only took you about 2 minutes.
Yeah. I dare say we'll all be in the audience.
Yeah.
Subject matter experts
ready,
ready and waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay.
Or one of us can.
You can.
Happy to allow you to.
So, Judge Sullivan, it looks like, yes, that would work.
Okay. So, I'll do what I need to do to clear it and be there.
Judge Judge Sullivan, I don't know if I misheard you, but it's the 10th, not the 9th.
Yeah, I fly over the night of the 9th, and then I'll be there all day on the 10th.
Thank you.
So those are your three questions.
Those are my three things.
Good. Okay, and let's go over again what the plan is to get the final version of the report.
So I am going to update with the few paragraphs that we talked about today, and I'm looking at my calendar here, and I should have some time to do that on Tuesday morning, so I can get it to you by before the end of the day on Tuesday, and I'll redline it. I'll redline it so everybody can see what it is, and if you have changes and things that you want to make from there, just let me know, and it would be great if we could kind of get it wrapped up by the end of the week.
I also noticed, and I don't know how I missed this, but I need to add the implementation of the Strengthening, Preserving, and Unifying Families legislation, because it goes directly to the adequacy of services for parents. So I'll add that. I'll get you stuff before Tuesday morning.
Okay.
Okay,
so we've anything else
we need to go over now?
Looks like we're all done.
Okay. Well, if there's some problem with coming over on the 10th, I should be able to let you know this afternoon, but I'll make it happen.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all.
Bye.
Thanks.
Thanks.